The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
And I spend a lot of time reflecting. Like, I listened to your book 14 times.
14 times.
Like, that's how much I missed you. I could find moments in my life where I found challenges in the last 2 months, where I would use the book as a reference as to how to navigate that situation.
Oh, wow.
Like, even having someone judging me. In the past, I would defend myself. And this time, I was like, oh, wow, there's judgment there. And then I remember the chapter, and I re-listened to the chapter, and then I got really clear that I was being judged, as opposed to being seen with loving and compassion eyes. It was very empowering.
If I understand, it was a chapter, fuck you and your fucking judgment.
Yeah.
How did you apply it? Because I don't see you saying that to somebody. So what did you do?
I did.
No.
I did. It felt very, very good to do it in that way, in a loving way also, and in a vulnerable way.
Like, how beautiful.
It wasn't done in a way of...
It was anger.
I was also in tears when I expressed that. It's a wonderful chaos. Beautifully
random. Messy and glorious. Solo or tandem?
We work to find rest. We fight to find peace. Both head and the heart.
Like it left you and me.
What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healed.
And the atheists pray?
It's a wonderful chaos.
So we're back after 2 months away. I think people probably thought we said we were going to go away and had no intention of coming back.
No.
You know, when people say, oh, we're going to take a break, usually that's code word for, hey, we're quitting. We just don't want to say it.
I did miss the show, and today I felt excited coming back to it.
Uh-huh.
But while we were not doing it, I can't say that I missed it.
Yeah.
That was the...
I mean, it's funny to say we do it every day, and I honestly didn't miss it. I really didn't miss it. It might sound horrible to say that.
It's horrible.
But...
You were listening to it every day.
But I was listening to it every day. So I didn't miss doing it, but I enjoyed actually listening to it.
Nice. So how are you, Andy Chaliff? Are you jet-lagged?
I'm pretty jet-lagged. I spent... 2 weeks or 2 months in Los Angeles. I found it so interesting to go back to a place I was raised in, but with the eyes of someone who was just experiencing it for the first time. So I did all these random things that I would have never done when I lived there. And I just said, Ronnie, let's get in the car. And we would drive for 2 hours to some random place that I'd never been. We walked to the Hollywood sign, you know, and kind of climbed in the Hollywood Hills. And I found things that I didn't even know existed. I think that's when I look at my life, at the fun I get to have, it's always when I go into an experience without an expectation and then I'm pleasantly surprised.
Nice.
What would you say, because you had 2 months, like, how was it? How was it?
Well, since you're one of the closest friends I had. It was
closest? I'd say only.
only friend that I have, Andy. It was quite apparent that I was like, oh shit, there's a gap there. Like 4:30 every day was an excuse to leave the house if I was working all day.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden I had 2 hours at home that I could do other things.
But like, did you see yourself do things like creatively, or like, what did you do differently? What I'm saying is, was that a gap, or did you find a way to make that 2 hours more meaningful because now you were replacing what we were doing here?
I wouldn't say I changed anything. My day would just continue.
Mm-hmm.
I elongated my day, but my work days have shifted. Instead of 8 hours, I work 5 hours.
Okay.
Just because I needed more self-care.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, Andy, because it's COVID, so it's not like you're gone and I can like socially give myself something mm-hmm. to replace that. So it's like there's COVID. I can't do shit with it. So I did spend a lot of time with Fetch and Yasmine, who we're going to have on the show again, and deepened my connection with these two beautiful souls. And I spent a lot of time reflecting. Like, I listened to your book 14 times.
14 times.
Like, that's how much I missed you.
That's incredible.
While Andy was in America, my last letter for him was just sharing that I listened to his book 14 times and then realizing at the end of that how much I missed him. And I didn't know how you received that, because you kind of changed the subject, and I wasn't sure if it was your inability to receive love or if it was just the medium of using chat to communicate that, that I couldn't really feel how you, how it impacted you. But I was in tears when I wrote that to you.
Oh, I mean, I thought it was beautiful. And I mean, I think 14 times, there's got to be something more interesting to read. As much as I like what I've written, I'm flattered that you've appreciated that much.
It really played a big role for me.
Yeah.
Because all the chapters in the book, I could find moments in my life where I found challenges in the last 2 months, where I would use the book as a reference as to how to navigate that situation.
Oh, wow.
Like, even having someone judging me. And in the past, I would defend myself. And this time I was like, oh, wow, there's judgment there. So, and then I remembered the chapter and I re-listened to the chapter. And then I got really clear that I was being judged. As opposed to being seen with loving and compassion eyes. And it was very empowering for me to take that and use that in a way to...
And how did... Because if I understand, it was a chapter, fuck you and your fucking judgment.
Yeah.
You know, the book isn't for kids. But how is it, like... How did you apply it? Because I don't see you saying that to somebody. So what did you do?
I did.
No.
I did.
No.
Yeah.
And, wow. And okay. It's almost like, don't, you know what they say, do as I do, not as I say, or something like that.
It felt very, very good to do it in that way, in a loving way also, and in a vulnerable way.
Like,
it wasn't done in a way of...
It was anger. It was like, just...
I was also in tears when I expressed that.
But can you share the story, or is it too connected to a person who may also be watching or something?
Everything that we do is connected.
Obviously. But share, please.
I was at a party, a little house party.
Okay.
What was it? It was a Christmas, second Christmas day.
Okay.
And I met this beautiful woman at the party. And obviously I was, I found her attractive. I shared that with her. But it took a while for me to just share the attraction, get it off my chest so I can ground myself again. And because she was expressing that she was living a non-dual lifestyle, and she also shared vulnerability where she cried, I'm like, oh, I can share this without needing it to be anything. But in the end, she actually judged me for expressing that, and she did it in a way that didn't feel... It felt that she
was... You sensed that there was something going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And... what happened was I messaged her on New Year, just say, hey, happy New Year. I'm really happy we met. And she just replied, delete my number. I sent her a really beautiful message of, I'm grateful too that we met this year. And like, for me.
So you shared just beautiful vulnerability in the message.
It was a video, actually. Uh-huh. And I sent a lot of people that are close to me that same video. So I picked 15 people. I love you guys. Thank you for being in my life. You got it too. And delete my number, she said. And that's where it put me back. And I was like, wow, what am I missing here?
Yeah.
And then I realized she was judging me. And
yeah. It took me that much time to realize she was judging me. Delete my number.
Yeah. So in the past, I would just vanish into the silence without saying anything, and just letting it be. But this time I shared back impact, how it felt, and that I felt sad that I felt a beautiful connection. And I felt sad that it wasn't, that she had not the same experience as me. And I just shared that there's definitely judgment there, and I'm not going to pretend.
Mm-hmm.
And as my mentor would say, fuck you and your judgment.
I see Bola Long has chimed in here and said, Andy, is this your parenting? Thank you, Bola Long. Yes.
Yes.
My parenting is teaching them how to use good cuss words at appropriate moments. Yeah, you got canceled. Raul says you got canceled. So you...
My favorite people are just making fun of me, and I love it.
But my question to you is, so after she basically said, don't write, what did you do? And you wrote this message to her. Well, how did she react to it?
Didn't respond.
She didn't respond.
I did share with her, if you're open to sharing how I made you feel that evening, that for me is interesting.
Yeah.
But what I'm not interested in is you telling me that you're having this non-dual way of being in the world, and then I feel judgment.
Yeah.
And you're not sharing what's happening for you.
Yeah, because it would imply that if you're having a non-dual experience of the world, that means you're experiencing it as is and not projecting onto it meaning, which, of course, we just do meaning-making automatically. Yeah. Well, I love that you got rejected like that. That's beautiful.
Me too.
Mm. Well, for those that don't know, the chapter, I don't know what number it is, but it's Fuck You and Your Fucking Judgment.
Chapter 13.
Chapter 13 on The Wounded Healer. To get to the thoughts behind it, because if you just hear Fuck You and Your Fucking Judgment, it may get confusing. The intention of that chapter was for me at that moment where I had spent a lot of time, as people had judged me, I gave them a lot of space. So I was there for everybody all the time. Mm. It was like, oh, I sense a judgment. Oh, let me take responsibility because I can hold space for this person, even if they're judging me. So in a way, there was an aspect of it which wasn't really authentic. In some ways, if someone's judging you and you see that and you're not actually dealing with that, you're actually pretending that that isn't happening. And in this moment, I just refused to do that. And in that way, it was very liberating for me because it was like, oh, I don't have to pretend like this isn't also happening. Once one liberates themselves from that, then they get a little bit freer in their lives because you can leave space for another's judgment or you don't need to leave space. But what in the case that we just discussed, I don't need to pretend like you're not judging me. Like that whole thing goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
And really, in the past, I would make myself really small. Like, oh, I'm a man. I did something wrong.
Mm.
And tiptoe around the woman. And this time was, like I said, very empowering.
Yeah, I love it when we deal with people that say they're non-dual. There's the non-dualist.
No, or enlightened.
Enlightened. And you said you had other chapters. Are there other things that came up? Would you care to share the South Africa experience? Because that was, or the Africa, not the South Africa. We can skip that one if you'd like, but I found it fascinating.
Yeah, we can share. I met a woman online and it went pretty deep, pretty fast. And to the point where I did buy a ticket to visit this woman, to explore in person. And then a friend came to my house and he pretty much gave me a reality check that I didn't expect.
Okay.
And the reality check was, are you crazy? You're just going there. You don't know her. Like, do you know how many scams there are? And all of a sudden, I felt this tension in my body where, oh, fuck. Like, everything that I know of this woman, I trust. And at the same time, when I shared it with you also, you shared that a common friend of ours, who I also hold very high in terms of her sensitivity around people, had undergone a scam herself.
Yeah.
So why not me? And in a way, on the day of my flight, I canceled it. And it was probably one of the most difficult decisions I made.
I mean, it must have been intense. I mean, how long were you in contact with this person?
3 months.
So you're in contact 3 months. You basically are building up to a moment that you're going to fly to Kenya. And then all of a sudden on the day you say, I'm not coming.
Yeah. Again, there's a pattern that I have that I also broke. And the pattern was I didn't fully express to her the reasons. And I saw by not expressing it, it made her feel really confused and anxious. Mm. And I realized it's so irresponsible not to share what was behind that. So we got on a call, and I shared with her my fear of her being a con artist and what it was based on. And the funny thing is, she received it with nothing but love. Mm.
Which, this is the screwed up thing. Did that make you feel more or less that she was a con artist, potentially? Because if she was a really good con artist, then that would be the way she would respond as well. Or maybe not, who knows? But interesting.
She's being quite consistent in her behavior.
Okay.
So she was able to receive it, but she didn't pretend that it didn't hurt or that she felt disappointed, at least. Mm. And that's what I found very beautiful. But I don't regret the decision because I couldn't sleep for a whole week before the trip.
Yeah.
It kept me up at night and I just couldn't find anything in myself. Do you know that? I mean, you were one of the reasons I didn't go.
Like, I have nothing. Like, if I would be kidnapped, there's nothing. There's nothing to steal.
Yeah.
But then I realized, oh, most of my friends are wealthy.
Yeah. And that was the thought, was that they kidnapped you and tried to get the money. It would be from people you knew. Yeah.
Yeah. As far as wanting to be a burden in your life, that's the last thing I would want to bring on your head.
Yeah, well. I was in the airport with Ronnie yesterday, and I said to her, isn't it funny? I was behind somebody who was complaining about something that had happened. And I said to Ronnie, isn't it amazing that if something negative happens or perceived as negative happens to you, how you process it totally defines your life. Mm. So that person processed that situation as negative. And I'm like, I would just say it is, okay, that's apparently where we are right now. What are we going to do? You know, because when I went to the US, like I tested positive for COVID. Yeah, since I was under so many precautions, so much, it was really hard to believe it was COVID. So I've got everyone else freaking out about around me, and I'm laughing like, okay, guys, something doesn't feel right here. Like, yes, I hear all of it, but let's just do the judicious thing. As everyone is thinking, oh, go into quarantine. Oh, my God. Da, da, da. And I was like, guys, let's just get another test just to validate or invalidate, because you know, I don't like taking things at face value and just following the herd. Mm. And so I test and I test negative, right? And then to get the double test, I do the antibody test, right? Where they test your blood to say, have you ever had COVID? And that was also a negative. So it was really funny because as everyone's freaking out, do you have COVID? You know, I know my first response is, hey, if I die, it's okay. And then you and Ronnie would say, yeah, it's okay for you, but you leave us behind. So
you fucking dick.
So. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to live in fear. But what I meant to say is there was some sort of relaxation through that process. There wasn't any hysteria. Mm. And I guess the thing that I see in life is, you know, and I mentioned it on one of our shows when I listened back to that show with Ronnie, which I thought was very funny, when I said when we take a trip and Ronnie is relieved that we get there. So she's got all of the stress built up. And then we get to the place. It's like, oh, we got here. And I'm always like excited, like, shit, we made it. You know, like, so the energy that I've attached to is I have no expectation we're going to get there. It's an intention, but I don't know if it'll really happen. And I see that way of being is it makes life so much easier, so much more enjoyable. Yeah. And I don't know why I'm saying this right now.
Me neither.
I thought we had some topic around this, but
no, you're just talking, Andy.
Okay. But I think it was attached to the idea of something that we were now discussing. Well, my point being at the end, the expectation is just an intention. And then things turn out the way they turn out. Yeah. And the more I'm in touch with that, the happier I am, I have to say. You know, for me, part of the intention was to go and support David, my friend. And I noticed that, you know, he was very isolated during COVID, and it was very hard for him to let me even visiting be accepted as some sort of form of freedom. Like, oh, wow, I got time to spend with friends. And it goes back, I guess, to the moment ago, which is that the mindset has a deep impact on how you process the world. And his mindset was very much more protective and wanting to make sure that you know, he separated as much as he could from the outside world.
Hmm.
Which means that the whole time we were together, I had a mask on, even though we were isolating for 2 months together.
Unless you were eating?
Unless we're eating, yeah. Yeah, we're very, very strict there. Any other stories from the book?
I think the beginning of the book, when you spoke about, I promised never to suppress my emotions on this trip.
Yeah.
That's kind of an agreement that I've made myself with myself moving forward.
And how does that show up?
Just heightened awareness in my life, like even on this show, like just tuning into where am I shutting down and where can I open up more and show more and be more. A few days ago, I shared on, and it's fucking great, a kind of vulnerable share of how am I doing, a friend asked. And then I shared, and actually this was coming from, I don't remember the chapter, but you sharing to celebrate the things that we're ashamed of when you peed in the car.
Yeah.
And if I learned anything during last year when I did run out of finances and I just couldn't, and I took it to heart and I was blaming myself, like I even thought about ending my life. That story came back again.
Mm-hmm.
But this time, me wanting to end my life, I allowed it to really enter me as opposed to playing with it for a few days. Okay, let's end up my life. What happens? And then there was a statement, which also came from our journey together that kind of got hammered into me. I'm not worth living if I can't sustain my business. So I need to end my life. Ah. And when I wrote that statement, I was like, what the fuck? That's insane. I'm going to end my life because I can't keep my business above water during COVID. Like, is that how much I'm worth?
And think about how many people that have ended their lives because of it.
And then and then because I allowed myself to get that far, I got to see your face, my mother's face, my nephews, friends and family who love and respect me with a big, what the fuck? What the fuck just happened here?
Yeah.
And the agony I would leave my family in, and just because of an inability that I've still have to ask for help when I need it.
Yeah.
So this was the first time I encountered that. I got to see also the five times I did try to kill myself when I was a drug addict. In case my mother listens to this, it was a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, mama.
Like I never had this way of thinking to process this. And I was going to make a post about this too, but of course I don't want to worry my family.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd rather talk about it here. Yeah. So, but again, because of that insight, I could make the post. I feel very grounded. I feel very, been doing some nice meditations. I'm reading your book. That keeps me sane.
Mm.
You are who you surround yourself with. So I have a few good books to, and I also, in a way, to celebrate the things which I wouldn't normally share. I've been unfucked for a while now. And it's fucking great.
Yeah.
And if anything's fucking me, it's my bank account.
And that's fucking great.
Yeah. Wow. And I really laughed. Like that was a genuine first time in my life that I could celebrate it without it needing to hide it or, oh shit, I'm not good enough. Or, so I would say Wonderful Chaos, your book, spending time with you the last 9 months every day together almost. It's really helped me to find peace with a lot of stuff that I struggled. So back to where I started, full circle, because I talk too much and it's fucking great. No suppressing.
Wow.
And I do see an experience that the more I allow my voice to express the things which I don't want to express, the more I can relax into the present moment and stay connected with you and with the show and with everything that I do.
That's beautiful.
There's nothing to hide.
No. When you said that, when you spoke and you said a few big things, but one of the things you said that, and I guess I've always seen it in you, but we've never or we've discussed it in different ways, I guess, that when you said that you attached your value or even your right to exist with your ability to earn and to be comfortable with what money you have in the bank account. And as you said that, you know, and I was, you know, I taught, you know, there's all the statistics that come out during the COVID time of how many people commit suicide during this period. And you know that a great deal of that comes from people feeling so in dismay around their financial situation that that's the way that they've decided to deal with it.
Hmm. I panicked. Like I went into, if in 2 months from now I don't get a client, or I've been sending 100, 150 messages every day almost on LinkedIn, cold emailing. I get a lot of response, actually. I would say 15% respond back saying, We love your work. Great offer. I love the way you write it. Images are amazing. And almost every day I get a message, but it's just planting seeds for the future. And you know, I feel grateful for every message I get back, even though nothing is showing up as materializing. But at some point I was like, oh, if I can't be a photographer, then what the hell am I going to do in my life? Like, I don't have an education. Like, all that shit came up. Don't have an education. I should just end it all.
Yeah.
I should just finish it. Enough. I've struggled enough. I'm done with this.
Yeah.
And then I miss the opportunity to see what I can create. And I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I'm definitely on board.
Yeah. Interesting. Raul wrote, and I found this interesting. We discussed this some time ago, actually. He says, not suppressing, but not mad as hell. That's interesting. And I think that was something that I didn't phrase it the way Raul phrased it, but I phrased it as that a lot of times when all the situation around you, the conditions around you make it impossible for you to make work, you'll say, Andy, how do I make work, and not like, this fucking situation that I have no control over is imposing on me. So what makes that you deal with it in one way and not another way? So what makes that you don't turn it into anger and frustration? You stay with the, I'm holding this because I can take responsibility for my own life, and that's it.
Wouldn't it be the same as it's storming outside and then you're screaming at the rain? Why would you scream at the rain?
Yeah, but in a weird way, the rain, we could say, is just the system of the earth, which no one has any control over it, to the degree that with global warming, everyone can argue that. But if a government says, hey, we're closing down all this or that, you have no opportunity to work. And you're then saying, you know what? I'm suffering. When in actuality, the fact that all the businesses are closed down is the reason why you're suffering.
Yeah.
Not because you don't know how to make work.
Yeah.
And I see that a lot of times you carry that weight on yourself as if it's my responsibility. And yes, it is. We agree on that. But then again, it's not that you're in this situation because they've done a quarantine where no one's allowed to do any business anyways.
Yeah.
So that's when Raul says he could also imagine someone going down that path just as easily as I could imagine as well, as we saw last week in Amsterdam with the riots. Yeah. I'm lucky in that regard because of how I lived. I've gotten lucky in that how I've supported and built my life is around businesses that don't necessarily get impacted by COVID or quarantines. So in that sense, I'm deeply grateful for that. Yeah. I got a beautiful message from somebody else yesterday, and they said they love the way we held such intense topics so lightly and full of love and laughter. And that really meant a lot to me. I think that's a core point, that is that I think when one makes a subject so intense that all of a sudden you lose the play in it or the curiosity in it, then all of a sudden you reinforce this negative thing and you lose the sort of lightness of life. And I do love the lightness of life, like holding the sadness with the laughter side by side. And I do see that when we try to bring guests on, I do love holding things with love and lightness.
Yeah. As opposed to feeding their story.
And as opposed to feeding or saying, oh, let's be really heavy duty and make it really intense. And then almost like you say, feeding the story. And that would be, yes, it would be reaffirming it in a way that they feel stuck in that story, for instance. Yeah.
And we have had really tough subjects, like also the puppeteer that went to the schools.
Yeah.
I think that was one of our nicest shows also in a way of.
Yeah, that was the woman who created puppetry, went into schools, and then found sexual people that were being molested at home.
Yeah.
That's something that I really did. I have to say I enjoyed a lot. It was getting those people that were very much appreciating how we engage subjects. And you see, Jessica, who was also on the show, right? Her topic was, of course, an intense topic. But I feel that when one leaves the time with us, they feel that we connected with them, but we were respectful of their story without trying to make it, abuse it.
I always feel that there's a space that's being created, and I don't know if it's intentional, where we all walk away having learned something or like integrated better.
Yeah. Yeah. Even subjects that we think we might know, but then we leave ourselves a lot of curiosity to rediscover them again.
Yeah.
You know, like one of the subjects we have coming on is the I was raped at 25 story. And that, like, it's weird because I'll write the subject down to prepare for that show. But then, like, there'll be this other consciousness in my brain that's sitting there saying, Jesus, we're talking to a woman who's been raped about and two men. Like, who are we to have that discussion with her, right?
Yeah.
Like that's that goes into my head. And then I find peace again because I know we'll meet her in her space and we're not going to impose and all that. But there's that moment of like, wow, we're really doing this.
Yeah, that's actually one of my friends, right?
And
it was funny because when I asked her to do the show on this, because she does a lot of women's work, she's a doula. Hmm. If I ask her what happened in your life to propel you onto this journey, it was that moment in time which actually shattered her. It broke her.
Yeah.
So I really feel her trust in coming onto the show. And of course, she's watched some shows. She's also Skyped with you when you were together, and she knows us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think she her yes comes from just trusting us.
Hmm. And in another show where I believe it was Jessica found a guest, she's thrown a few guests over to us, was a man who developed emotional CPR. And he had schizophrenia for many years. And it was through his schizophrenia that he actually developed the system which helped him overcome that schizophrenia.
Wow.
And what I thought was beautiful is that in some ways, when someone overcomes the thing, like the schizophrenia, they often don't want to talk about that anymore because now we've discovered an approach and we want to talk about the approach. And for me, when we have the show, I'm more curious of the backstories that led to the discovery, because that's where other people are currently struggling today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But those are also the shows that get more views, right?
The ones where people are more authentic.
Where people come and they talk about, like, I've created this. It's a 5-step thing.
Yeah.
Like, I just have a couple of friends that have podcasts and it's all about success and business and their ratings are off the roof.
Yeah, I know. I believe that if we did our only success in business, like our viewership would shoot up, but we wouldn't enjoy anything that we're doing. Because the funny thing is it's appealing to what a person desires. And what are we doing? We're sort of just being with people, which I think they also desire. Let's also make that clear. But it's not a success or it doesn't compel you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who the hell wants to watch Dark Knight to the Soul, huh?
Yeah. Dark Knight to the Soul, one of our favorite shows that only talks about the darkness of like dealing with the darkest, deepest dementia of whatever is going on in your head. Yeah. Mm. So, yeah. I'm looking forward to bringing on a lot of more diverse subjects as well, because we've gone through the well of a lot of the things that we were more comfortable with. So I'm really curious to dig into areas where it'll be a big exploration for the both of us.
Nice.
And I think when I did the last or the last letter tour, and I told you I always wanted to do the tour in drastically different locations when I would sit with the groups, because I wanted to experience myself being in groups that were so diverse. Like, why wouldn't it work to write letters to loved ones in any single group you could imagine? It shouldn't. And in a way, I kind of have the same idea of this show.
Yeah.
Is that why wouldn't we be able to invite anybody on? And then, and some things I wouldn't want to give space for, you know, but like.
Anything in particular?
I mean, I couldn't see putting like a white supremacist on the show, because I don't feel like I'd want to have understanding for them, although I could have understanding for them.
In your Wounded Healer book, you spoke to this woman. It was a chapter on white privilege.
Yeah.
And I think during the time that you were gone, I also spent like a few weeks just crying for all the injustice that is happening in the world towards people who have a different color.
Yeah.
Like, slave labor has ended, but it hasn't. In a way, it's just disguised in a different format that's more socially acceptable, and we become blind to it.
Totally. Even in education in America, if you leave college and you're indebted a few $100,000, you're now a slave to debt. You know, it's a different slavery. Let's not like compare the two, but it is a type of indebtedness to something which is hanging over you all the time.
Yeah.
I think that came out strongest for me. And I think it was really nice because I was in the U.S. during the Capitol uprising, when everyone stormed the Capitol. The uprising itself is, of course, a big story in the U.S. But what I found is the more interesting part of it is knowing that the Black Lives Matter protesters and those other protesters had such a different experience. And from the outside perspective, anyone outside of the U.S. would see it objectively and say, oh, two protests. One, if those were Black protesters going into that Capitol, you know there would be a lot of deaths. And then the fact that they were the white people that went into to do this.
And they were dressed like crazies.
Yeah. And there was a wholly different experience. So that would be a prime example of what you're speaking to. And I was fascinated being in the U.S. to have that, to see and have that experience while it was happening. Nice. Didn't surprise me. But that would be a prime example of where that shows up. So that's it for this first episode back. How are you feeling?
I feel grateful.
Oh, nice. It's really fun to kind of be back in a new sofa with you and trying to like navigate how are we going to change this? Okay, till tomorrow. We see you next time on
A Wonderful Chaos, people.
Bye-bye.
It's a wonderful chaos.
We like it that way.